That's how it always is. There's always something that could have been caught and we haven't caught it because we didn't hit record. And those are the moments that we realize that we're not recording a product. We're just documenting a process, you know?
Yeah, the document, the process documentation, a little bit more straight laced, but that the human capture of just normal conversation where the business is
Yeah.
done. Oh man. So you have to verbalize it to the next guy. Hey, what you do? I mean, we just talk about the solution. I mean, what do you really talk about though? How'd you do it? Like, I'm gonna document it for you, brother. Next time I'm gonna document
Yeah. We should have caught it the
Yeah.
first time.
All I know at the end of that half hour, the customer said they're ready to buy. That's all I know.
That's all I know. Yeah,
That's all I know.
that's all I know.
Well,
Yeah.
cool, man. What's next for IT? In today's economy, technology touches every aspect of the day-to-day operations of business. There has never been more pressure on IT to deliver for our organizations. So what can we expect over the next decade? We need to think differently about how we approach our work to continue to thrive into the future. This requires all of us to be intentional in how we look at our role going forward. Smart IT is an approach to getting the important things done by transforming the way we think, work, and lead. And now, let's disrupt the status quo, simplify the complex, and reduce risk the smart IT way.
I
Man.
just got off the phone with a prospect. Before I got here, turns out that they were the decision maker for a couple of locations, and I just ran across them. And because our data wasn't enriched in our Salesforce, you know, it gives us as a company an opportunity to serve them on a higher level. And we didn't miss out on the opportunity just because I just made a random call. You know, I sent them to, well, not, it wasn't random at all. What I do as a BDR is I'll make a list in Salesforce and upload it to our kind of CRM kind of thing, Sales Loft, and then email them, put them in an email cadence that is
Nice.
a automated email that I came up with my RSM and my managers and stuff like that. And the beauty of the BDR role is that you have a say in who you're targeting, how you're speaking to them, et cetera, you know, and they're really trusting us to be ourselves and try to position the closer, which is our,
Nice.
you know, the RSM or the account executive, whatever you want to call it, as the expert. So I just get to be curious and learn, and I just get to have a conversation and say, okay, well, when's a good time to show,
So you said,
when's a good time to show you this? You know, this sounds
hey.
like you're a good fit, or at least you need to know. And in this case, they are a current customer for one of our products, and we just upgraded the product, turned like three products into a suite.
Okay,
And
nice.
you know, when that happens in software, we no longer service the old product, the legacy product. We always move into the next phase, which is servicing and adding all the new additions to the new platform. So
I love that,
the line that I came up with in that
man.
sense is, well, I'm happy I caught you, because the worst thing that could happen is you are out at dinner with one of your friends who runs in some other place, and you hear it from them and not us.
Oh
And
yeah. You're like, how
that
Keenan
could
didn't
go
tell me?
over.
They changing something and Keenan didn't call me. Man, I gotta talk to
Yeah,
him.
that's how it can happen. And I've seen people lose business because of just something as simple as that, you know?
Yeah, 'cause I used to get those emails too with the notifications. Such and such has been deprecated, gonna be turned off at a certain period. We got some new features, blah, 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 blah. Man, you know, you kind of halfway read it. But you're right. Unless someone like talks to you about it,
okay, am I using that feature? Okay, maybe not. I don't care about it. But oh, I am using it. What's the timeline? Okay, what does this mean? So it is nice to talk to somebody in person to actually figure out what that means.
Yeah, and that's the role of the BDR, you know, the business development representatives, sales representatives, whatever you want to call it. Our role is really to be the communication for the industry, the base, the ground base communication, human being talking over the phone via email. I'm sending you information. I'm asking you for time to let my expert come in there and really give you a deep dive. And if that role doesn't exist, a lot of people are scared of AI taking over. There are current platforms that are hailing themselves as the AI BDR or things like that. It's when you're dealing with humans, man, we want to deal with humans. Even if we act like we don't like them or we don't have time for it, we trust a human more to just deliver us information and to schedule time with experts.
You can't beat that. And people are going to be actually putting a premium on that in the future. Like, hey, I'm trying to run from all these AI bots here, man. Let me run into this room here and find out, hey, there's a person over there. Let's go chat. And they're going to feel so much better. Yeah. But that's an interesting role, though. So it's like you're setting the table, you're positioning the solution potentially, and then you're bringing in that next person to come in and kind of figure out you qualified it. This is like, okay, we got something here, maybe something that we can progress on and let this other person. Because the other person feels more confident, like, okay, it might be something here versus a real, real cold call, which I know they hate that.
Yeah, and the closer, especially the software, the closer for the deal, we'll say, should not be having cold conversations. They should be having warm conversations, and they should also be having conversations with decision makers so they can cut through the nonsense, let them know this is what, not just what it does, but this is the value you're going to get out of it. Out of just having this in your tech suite and having an option on hand. And then not only having that expert in the room will help the business, the sales cycle close faster, but it also let them know, like, if things go wrong or having questions, that human aspect comes into play again. I got this guy who's getting paid off this. They better pick up the phone for me and answer some of these questions or tell me how do I move this and how do I get this widget to work and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that's one of the things I go over with my team. My manager loves about me right now is that I see my role not as the expert. My role is to position the expert. And like you said, qualify the call and the opportunities before they even get to meet each other. I'm the barrier. So not only do I want to qualify the different opportunities, but I want to disqualify. Like, if you're not a good fit, that's fine. Yeah. You just may not be a good fit right now. Yeah. That's fine. You know, I don't want to solve a problem that you don't have. I don't want to do that. I want to solve actual problems. I want to help actual businesses, actual people. And that requires me to make that call, send that email, have that conversation.
Yeah, that whole qualification process, when it's not there for other companies, maybe it's a startup or maybe a smaller company where just one salesperson has to do it all. And you look at their calendar and it's just crazy. And it's ups and downs, how they feel based off of, is this a real, real cold call? Or, you know what, my manager's on top of me. I got to make X amount of calls per day or show that I'm taking folks out to lunch. And that can get very frustrating. So I love it when they have that BDR-like function in place, the filter. Yeah. So the other rep saying, you know, I got 10 calls on my calendar this week. I'll feel pretty good. I got a legitimate chance of matching some type of problem that they got with a solution they got, and they potentially have money. And that's the other thing is, man, we love your solution, Keenan. This thing is awesome. And then you ready to move forward? Oh, man, I didn't bring my wallet, man. We don't got no money. It's like, oh, man. The power of the qualification process. Like, I got a problem. I want to kind of fix it now or in the near future. We'll have some way to actually produce some money to actually pay for it, which is a critical situation. Otherwise, yeah. You have those little CRMs like, man, the rep keep pushing this deal out. It's been sitting there for like 18 months. They say, hey, they got the problem. They like our solution. They figured out how to pay for it. Like, what?
Yeah. they forgot one critical piece to this puzzle. Yeah. So, and that's where, like, the next level of the sales team comes in, like the regional vice, the vice president or the president of sales, or, you know, the CEO, depends on how they got it structured. Yeah. They're going to start asking when they're looking at that pipeline, why do you have $50,000 worth of opportunities here? And your closed deals is 2,000. Yeah. And it's the end of the month.
What's going on here?
Are you lying to me?
You see, I talked to these people. They said they have the problem. They're thinking about it.
Well, did you ask them, did they have the budget? Did you ask them what timeline they were on? Well, did you ask them, are they just gathering information right now, or are they looking to make an actual change right now?
Yeah.
You know, that's where the regional manager's skill set really kicks in. The closer, we'll just say closer. Yeah. The closer skill set really kicks in, because those kinds of questions, and that's one of the reasons why when I make my calls or when I'm doing my outreach, my prospecting, I'm not really trying to be very feature oriented. And I just want to talk about your problems. And I'm not even talking about your problems like I can solve. I'm only talking about your problems because you know they exist and I know they exist.
Yes.
And if I know they exist and you know they exist, guess who else knows they exist? Your customer.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. I love that, because even if they have start mentioning problems that you can't fix, it might be, maybe they got four or five problems pressing them right now, and maybe your solution addressed one or two of them, but you won't know unless you get an opportunity to talk about it and just get it out. And it's kind of like non-pressure, right? Sometimes salespeople have so much pressure on that the prospect freezes up, or like, yeah, you guys can't really help me. But if you let them talk, okay, with slowness, okay, it takes you a long time to get this done. You're looking for productivity, looking for cost cut. What is it? What's the problem that you're facing? And if you let them get all those issues out on the table, and you can be like, okay, I found one. Okay, I got this one. Okay, five problems identified. We can help with two of those. Okay, we got success. Now, what happens if they mention five problems, Keenan, and you're like, our solution can't help with any of those five?
Then I'll be honest with them. This doesn't look like we can help you out. What our solution does help you with is these things.
Yeah.
So it looks like you're doing great on that front. And this is where having a good referral book comes into play.
Oh, okay.
Because if it's like your plumber, you know.
Yeah.
There's I don't think any plumber does all plumbing work.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a guy who does certain parts of the piping. You know, they may only do interior stuff, but anything outside of the house, you got to call this guy. Or I might go under the, I might do stuff like in the kitchen and in the bathroom and things like that. But if it's under the house or above the house, you got to call this guy, you know.
I like that.
If your referral network, and as you can, I'm sure you realize this as well, Will, software nowadays, more than ever, are trying to bundle solutions together and make like one-stop shops.
Yeah.
you know, because of that, because they want to be able to refer business to themselves. Like, oh, we can't fix, I can't fix those problems, but my guy in this department who runs this solution that's under our belt, they can fix that problem.
Well, with software, I love it, because you can make that call. Soon you finish the sales call, you go call the product team and say, hey, by the way, can you guys help out with this? Hey, I can tell my prospect this is on the roadmap. We can get it to him in 8 months. What do you think?
That's huge, actually. which is real. You know, that's the beauty of software, because we're not selling a tangible product that is non-changing. Software is ever changing. It's ever upgrading and adaptable. And the whole purpose of it is to, let's be honest, every piece of software is, the only reason it exists is because it makes people's lives easier. It saves them time. It helps them be more productive, and it makes them more money.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
And how we apply that, is completely up to the product team to frame it, you know, when whatever the interface they use and whatever the UX looks like and how the features are stacked against each other, but it's all based off those categories. You know, if it's going to be easier to use than your current process, then I think that's worth some money. If it's going to save me some time like most industries, time is one of the biggest barriers to added revenue. How much time does it take me to have a sales call, to shoot a podcast, to lay bricks on, you know, to build a house? You can save me time on that. I will pay you more money. You know, can I keep my team more can I keep them up to date and productive? If I can keep my team productive without making me feel like the worst boss ever and I'm jumping down their throat, but it's like it's easier for them to be productive and not feel like they're being overworked, I'm paying for that too, you know. And then of course I can make more money off of it with this, just adding this to my process, then that's also worth money, you know. So
yeah, and that points out the criticality of the feedback from the sales team, talking to real people, giving that feedback to the product team. Because you heard, say, over the last 6 weeks, this is the fifth person who came to us asking about this one particular feature that we don't have. Then it's like, okay, maybe we need to invest, put some development time, let's go build this feature. But if the sales team doesn't talk to the product team, they might not know. You know, sometimes the product team, they're locked in the lab, they're pushing out what they think the market wants. But if you're getting this valuable feedback, like, you know what, man, some of our competitors added this feature last week or last quarter, we keep hearing about it. Okay, that's a signal. Or sometimes it's like, you know what, Kenny said, you know what, this is $1 million deal. Our prospect said, we can solve this problem with this feature. We're willing to put $1 million versus, this customer kind of small. They're looking to buy like 10,000 product team. Like, yeah, come back later, man. Don't be bringing me a feature for $10,000, you're bringing $500,000, that's a whole different story. So that communication is huge, man. I'm like, man. So every no is right. So even a no, okay, not interested. Okay, take my notes, pass it up. You see our competitors, they like the GUI better, or they like the integration better, the setup better. You know, jot that down, bring it back to the product team. Say, okay, we're getting all this. We can make it better. It's like you said before, it's code, right? Developers can improve it, change it. You don't like the way the buttons are, we'll change the layout. I mean, that's really, really powerful. So sometimes it's not the sales problem, it's a product problem. It's like, our product just doesn't do what they want. So CEO, hey, you know who to go talk to, right? Sales and marketing doing what they should be doing. So it's like, you got to make sure the right team is being pinged for, like, okay, how come we're not hitting our numbers?
And that's one of the most important parts of a role that is like a BDR, or an account manager, or, you know, like a customer success manager, customer experience manager, things like that. You're speaking to your client, your prospect, or your customer, not as the expert, but as a person who is there to just gather information and help them out with updating some process. I think you have a problem. Is this your problem? Or let me know your problem. And if we can't solve it, because like you said, this button doesn't do this, or even simpler, the button's the wrong color.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? We've all seen it, you know. Yeah. Branding matters. The button's the wrong color. That's something we need to be able to immediately communicate back to the product team, because more than ever, product team has nothing to do with customer acquisition at all.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so they're most of the time so far removed from what actual people who are paying for this thing feel and how they use it, because I mean, it's software. Like, people, one of my managers said this earlier this week. He was like, "It's software, man. People have been jailbreaking phones since phones have been a thing. Cell phones was a thing. Yeah. They're gonna try to find ways to get around, and they're gonna find ways to make it their own. So we should be making it their own for them.
You know, I mean, see situations
for them.
Good for it, yeah. I mean, seeing situations, not the color button. It's like the old version had the button say done, and now you got to say confirm. And it's like, what's the big deal? Done, confirm, okay. It's like, or it used to pop up at the end and say we're done or completed. And all of a sudden it's changed, or the end user might say, we don't like it that way. So it's like, got to have that feedback. Otherwise, if your product team is like, this is the way it's going to be, we did our research, and it's just the way it should be. It's more efficient. It's like, that make a difference. What are the bulk of your customers asking about or complaining about? So you got to make sure they listen. In some cases, that communication is broken between the sales team and product, and they're making a lot of assumptions. And then the marketing team come in, is like, this is what the product team told us. We're going to push it out there. And then you, Keenan, got to go to the phone and like, yeah, Keenan, I was just on your website, and it said it could do this, this, and this. And hopefully it matches up with what you know, because you got to tell them like, well, let me clarify that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I have a saying that goes like this: believe your own BS, especially when you're talking to prospects, because more than ever, product will send out a new solution that isn't fully fleshed out. And the only reason they will do that is because people above them is like, it's good enough, let's sell it. Let's get people on board. Or even deeper and smarter, let's find our first case studies so we can figure out how things go well, how things can be improved. And if we don't sell it to somebody, then we'll never know. We got to sell it to actual customers, and then it's on the BDR, the sales guys, to go out into the world, into the market, and find those case studies, find those first couple clients who are going to be onboarded and be willing to be a part of the family on the early stage. Those guys win. The people who are early adapters, they win. And more than ever in software, we see the winners and losers based off longevity, right? You let me know if I'm wrong on that, because I believe the winners and losers in the software space are the ones that stick in there for years on end. They adapt, they change, they make some mistakes. They bring a product to the market. It didn't work. They didn't give up. They brought it back with the new interface. And all they needed to change was how it looked. Or they add a little bit of more code, and now the integrations work a little bit better.
Yeah.
Or they add some AI to it. And just generative AI. People have been adding just generative text AI, and that has been immensely elevating software. Just like, it's the same thing. All I did was kind of add ChatGPT in the background.
All of a sudden, that user experience seems better for some reason. It's like, wow.
I added a little bit more oomph to my chatbot. I had a chatbot already, but it was just a static image. It wasn't like a cartoonish based image that looks like a real person and their mouth moves when you're talking to it, and they got a little bit more realistic and empathetic responses.
And they got a faster sometimes, for some reason.
It got faster, you know. Well, faster is always the
perception,
Like, we need that. We need that. We live in such an age that fast is a big marker for success. How fast can the software go? How quick can we get a response? It matters a lot.
But you brought up something very interesting about the, you know, developing those customers who become loyal and stay with you year over year. That kind of get into the whole marketing and brand. Like, we like this brand because they keep updating, getting better. They take our feedback over and over again. We love that. So sometimes if the product development cycle goes weird or it's too slow to respond, then all of a sudden you start to see people start to do that shopping. And they should know your competitor is like getting some hits. Like, and he's like, hey, this guy not responding like he used to. I usually check in every 3 months with him, try to take him out to lunch. You're not responding. And 6 months later, find out, oh yeah, Keenan, we're not going to be renewing. Like, what? Those signals, like, something's wrong here. The responses are slower. They're not going out to lunch. Okay, this guy's on my competitor's website. Okay, let me check with the product. Is something wrong on our roadmap, the feedback? Yeah, go ahead.
That part right there, the signs. Yeah. Like you said, the signs, the writing on the wall, as one would call it. You know, my customer, and a big part of the writing on the wall that we miss as providers, developers, and at its base, you know, as sales guys, as the BDRs and the closers, we're missing that writing on the wall when we don't follow up with the people who we've closed deals with and ask how things are going, ask for more business, ask for referrals, take them to lunch, show up in person. I mean, think about it. Software, the sales process for software is the same sales process for Cutco Knives.
Yeah.
I go and knock on a door and I pitch you this product and show you that it can cut through things a lot easier and cleaner than the other knives, than the other software, right? Yeah. It hasn't changed. So if I knock on a dude's door and I say, Mr. Reed, this software is gonna help you save time, money, and while it's helping you save time and money, it's gonna give you back that time to put into more things that make you more money.
Yeah.
And you say, yes, Mr. Coke. I like that. Let's do business. We shake hands, you sign the deal, you give me the card. And I don't come back and say, Mr. Reed, we have had you as a customer 3 months. How's things going? If I don't do that, say things are going well. Things are going great. Yeah. Perfect. They're perfect. But the guy down the streets who makes the same type of product comes in and he takes you to lunch.
Yeah.
And he shows you that we not only can do the same thing that Mr. Coke Company has done down the street, but we added this little feature too. And I'll come take you to lunch every once in a while. You know, people buy even in business, emotionally. And they buy from people they like. Yes. Even if the product works and it makes sense and it saves them money and time and all those, that four quadrants that I have first went all over, even if it hits all those, the last one is, do I like the person?
Yes.
Do I like the brand? Can I resonate and relate to the person and the brand? So the writing on the wall is when we take out that last piece of the human element, you start losing customers like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because your competitor went and told them about that cutting board to go with that knife. And by the way, we get that to you free. After you get that, then we add a new book on how to cut your steak even better. And that's only X amount of money. Man. And next thing you know, they got a whole kitchen set in there. And you come back 6 months later, can you get back around to them? So how's it going? Did that knife work? Yeah, cut my steak's fantastic. You ready to find out? We got some new products here. We got a cutting board. And I'm not interested. What happened? Dude, we got the entire kitchen set already, man. Your competitor is in. We appreciate your time, though. I'm like, oh, wow.
That's it. That's how it happens.
They scooped us.
That's how it happens. That is how it happens. You know, the customer, they can like you to death. They could spend money with you for years. But, you know, Apple is a great example of this. Apple is a great brand. The software may not be as technologically good as an Android software, but people buy into the brand because they give them so much brand identity, to the point where when you see a different text message come in, you recognize that this is an Apple. This is not an Apple product. I'm not even going to give this person the level of respect that I give my Apple guy, my friends who use Apple phones, and even them, they're losing customers.
Yeah. Cause before the brand was, it's the money. We don't care about spending more because the brand, but if things get tight, whoa, the dollars are short. I mean, I got to watch it. I love your brand. I like you. The product works, but I need to cut 20%. I don't have that much money. And that's when your other competitor come by and say, it's 20% cheaper. And you're like, I'm going to go ahead and do it this time.
Yeah. Then 20% cheaper, integrates with everything. You can customize it. You can make it your own. And guess what? We're going to ask you how you're doing. We're going to give you free stuff. It's a no-brainer. But the thing that makes people loyal are those early adopters. And if you take care of your early adopters, the people who grew up on, like, there's, I remember I had one of those, I can't remember what it was called. You'll probably know better than me, but it was the Mac computer that was like, had the colorful gel type of top. It was like,
oh, different colors you can get it in.
Had the handle on the top. You know, we had one of those when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But we went to HP's because this was even before, mind you, I'm dating myself. This is even before cell phones was a thing, right?
Ooh, yeah.
We went to HP's because they were more affordable. All the schools had them. You know, it was like Dell and HP. All the schools had them. They were more affordable. And my mom, at the time, she worked for Abbott Laboratories in Illinois. That's what she worked with as well. The Mac was just too complicated. Nothing worked with it. You know, the floppy, it was like an all-in-one kind of thing. Like, yeah. It just didn't seem right, you know, because every other computer had a tower and, you know, had all the stuff. It was a set. it made sense for you to have that giant desk that we used to have. So we ended up going over to the Dell and HP stuff. And my little brother and sister, they're about to turn 30 next year, right? They are not those people. They are Apple people to death. That's because in their time, everybody, like the schools had Macs, and they had the iPads, and iPhones were a thing their whole life. They grew up on the internet. They don't know what dial up is. Now, so that brand identity stuck in to the point where they feel like they were early adopters, and there's no point in getting a more affordable or different product, even if it was more affordable and it's better. Who cares? Like, that's not who I am.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing that we've got like two sides of the same coin. Because one thing is, when you get your customers and they're happy, you have to defend against competitors trying all these new different things to pull them away. But you got to maintain that year over year after year, right? Because with the software, it's always a renewal. You get updates, upgrades, you know, you get upsell. So it's a constant motion to have that sales team in the field, constantly in contact to figure out, like, looking for those signals, happy, nothing going on. And then making sure marketing is sending out the right message, you know, reinforces brand. And then making sure the product team is up on their game. Could turn out to be, maybe there's been some shift in the organization, and maybe your support team is having some troubles. You could lose that customer on just support. It's like, they're taking too long to respond. So everything else is working okay, but Keenan, man, I sent the support ticket in and they didn't get back to me in a certain period of time. So now all of a sudden it's like, okay, as a business, you know, it takes the entire team working together to make sure every time you call into the new person, you can have some success, but also to that existing person 5 years in, product's still great, but support's kind of slipping. Or maybe it's the product roadmap. Yeah, you got missing something out there. So it's like, you got to get up every morning, man, to go hot, to go win. I think sometimes get a little relaxed. Like, you know what? Man, we're doing good. We don't need as many BDRs. But you know what? We're going to try AI model instead. Or you know what? Product team, we're going to outsource this overseas to product development. Or you know what? Marketing, we're going to cut marketing. So when the executives start to mess around with the winning formula, at least for now, right? Or they slow to respond to competitive forces. Then all of a sudden, it makes your job even harder because you're calling around and people are like, yeah, man, I got this problem, but sorry, man, we missed you by a couple of weeks, man. We already got something in place. Or, you know what, we're not going to renew this year because, you know, X, Y, Z. So just talk about all those different things.
They have better support. Like you said, like we've all seen it. And let me ask you what your idea is on this. Who's more important to the customer? The sales team or the support team?
Support, and the right support. Because you could have like low level support who take care of the technical issues, but that human touch from a manager who's got the experience, who can get on the phone, or do that follow-up email and have enough details. Hey, this is where you got your interface. We recommend this. We fixed the issue, blah, blah, blah. It has to be high level. Because the day you close the deal, you're still trying to maintain that customer after that period. You're working on the renewal to the next year. You're working on upsells. And it's a constant process. So when people shift that support model and say, yeah, we don't need as many tier three people maybe, or we're going to automate tier one with AI bots. Like, the AI bot better be good because that might be just enough to piss people off. Like, hey, man, I used to call this guy and now on your website, I got to go to a virtual chat bot. Then I got to go to a phone system. And it takes me 20 minutes to get to a human who might get back to me next tomorrow. That's a problem.
Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of that. And there's a big lack of communication across those teams, where, because it's like any other company, as you grow and you make more revenue and you build bigger teams, departments become siloed off and they only talk inner communication to themselves, and there's no inner communication across different departments. And we run into the situation like a BDR hears something like that. Oh man, you calling me to sell me some other product that you guys have, but I put in a support ticket last week. I haven't heard from you guys. What do you want from me, man? Are you going to fix my problem, sir? Yeah. No, I'm here to sell you another problem.
I'm trying to get more money out of you right now.
Then I'll have somebody reach out, you know. Yeah. But there's such a need for that inner communication to be the most important piece, because from my perspective, and I talk about this to the folks who I consult, the company I work for, my peers, everybody, once you get the sale and you hand it off, it's not done. Don't just finish it there. Give them time to let the implementation team kick in, let the customer service team kick in, and then go back as their sales manager. Ask them how it's doing, knowing that it's going great. Go when you know it's going great. Then ask them for more business. Ask them for a referral. Ask them for some feedback. You know, let me get a case study out of you. Can I shoot a quick video or something? Can you write me a reference or give me a Google review or something like that? Do that while it's good. Get them in the habit of having positive reinforcement for you, so you can continue the sales across their network.
Yeah.
We're not gonna, like I said, it's just like going door to door and selling Cutco knives.
Yeah.
Those people who were successful at selling Cutco knives were not just random door knockers. Those people were eating off referrals.
Oh yeah.
Go to the events. Do the conferences, throw your events, make things seem like a ecosystem where I get this product solves a problem, they create another product, I get that product, it solves another problem, we're making money, something breaks in the product, they fix the product, they solve my problem that got fixed, that needed to be fixed, that already was working, they fixed it somehow. Google Chrome comes out with another Chrome 80,000 comes out.
Yeah.
So now everything needs to be updated on the browsers. You know, they figure out how to integrate with the browser better. They have some new API function that comes out for some tool that we need to make this one critical thing happen in our business. And they work with that company. They work with this company to make sure everything works in a collaborative space. And guess what? The whole time, my sales manager has been working for this company for 10 years, for 5 years. Yeah. And I hear from them, if not every month, every other month.
Nice.
When they're in town, they stop in. They drop our team off donuts, you know. Those guys who are doing that, they're making the big bucks.
They're making the money, man. They're hitting their numbers.
They're hitting their numbers, man.
So what's your secret,
they're
man?
Their numbers.
It's also interesting you mentioned about some of the integration work. Because sometimes it doesn't have to be a feature in some of our core product, but it's an integration piece. And then we come across enough people who said they have issues with it, but maybe we partner with another company. Or maybe we offer some additional services to help you with that integration. Kind of like, you know what? This customer's going to struggle with that, man. They got to throw an API key in. They got to map some fields here. They're not going to be able to do it themselves. We got the experience. Our larger customers have the in-house tech staff to do it. These smaller ones don't do it. You know what? Either we're going to hire a couple extra people to do a new service that we brand it, or we'll have a partner do it. But it's that constant communication and feedback around the way. What's going to make this customer successful with implementing our solution? Because if our solution success depends on this integration, and we don't have our hand in that integration, they're going to say, we're going to be calling our support line. This thing doesn't work. Well, it's not our product problem. It's the third party with the API call. Well, can you help me? Well, that's not really us. Ah, but hey, you guys have been around for 20 years. Y'all are these customers. They're doing this integration too. You said, you mean you didn't come across it, come up with some solutions and proactively talked about that in the initial implementation? Because you know they're going to hit that milestone of implementation. Okay, they're going to run into some of the issues right here. We know this. We're ready. We got the guide. We got a blog. Hey, one of our engineers did a video. It's on our website. The customer don't know it like off the hand, but they're like, oh man, that's convenient, man. Look at this website. And just as he's looking at the website with the video, Keenan calls. How you doing, man? Yeah, Keenan, man, I was just about to do this integration. And I walked to your engineer on this video. This is cool, man. You know what? I got time for lunch, man. Because he lays it out for me. It's like,
total. That's where the BDR comes in, Will. The BDR gets the new hotness. They got the new update. We get to, our intersection is in between the, like I said, you know, the problem and the solution. But we're just having conversations in the middle. Hey, this is what we have now. I don't think you guys have seen it, or we haven't had an opportunity to make it easy for you to understand how we can help solve this problem. Not to say you're doing anything wrong in your current process, but I think we can maybe save you some time. We can make things a lot easier. Yeah. And, you know, we save your time, make things easier, you make more money. That's the equation, right?
Yes. Upselling, you know, is much easier than the new sale. That's why you just met. So
yeah, you just cross sell the things that you already have, and like you said, and work with some third parties if you can, to either if you don't want to or don't have the capability to build the solution, partner.
Yes. Make some more money through the partnership. As opposed to some people like, yeah, well, you'll figure it out on your own. And they go somewhere else. And that other person they find can do what you do plus more. Ooh, dangerous spot. Dangerous spot. You want to be ahead of that. We already identified the partner. We worked out the paperwork. We're getting a fee on the back end. And our customer's still happy. And we didn't have to make the investment to bring that capability in-house. But maybe we'll do it in the future. You get that flexibility as a business to figure out where you want to do it. Just because you got that frontline exposure to what the customer's thinking, feeling, and that's huge, man. That's huge.
That's huge. I think and like I said, that piece, when all those pieces on the higher end is working according to that type of model, that's where the money is for the sales team. The sales team gets to go out into the market and say, hey, you spoke, we listened. Yeah. You said you needed this new function. You said you needed the button to be red. when can we show it to you? My guy's going to be in the area in 2 weeks. I'm going to send him over there. All right. Yeah. And I just need you to give him 15 minutes of your time, 20 minutes of your time, you know. And that's the other piece, is like that time that we need. We got to remember, in software, we're selling to businesses. More, less likely than ever, like, you don't need a BDR and sales manager and account manager and product team, implementation team for B2C products or services. Right.
Yeah.
Any business that has that kind of structure, you are selling enterprise. You are selling to businesses, right? Am I wrong on that?
You're right. It could be that one person you're initially talking to, and there's 20 people behind them that's all involved in that buying process.
They don't have the time to be wasted on a million demos, right? So the better we get at qualifying the person who needs to see the demo, who can make the decision. So that's the same thing. Who needs to see it, who also can make the decision.
Yes. You know, the worst thing is to be demoing to the person signing the check and they have no interest in going into interface. And they're like, why am I on this call? Or you got the final call and the person who got the check isn't on the call. So like, you need to know up front, you need to figure out the landscape. Okay, I'm talking to the first person, he got the problem. But then he has a colleague who's gonna do the the implementation on their side. There's another person who has to do compliance, and that third person maybe can cut the check. You need to map that out and see how many touch points do we need and how can we make this as short as possible to make this buying experience quick and efficient so we don't waste time and fail. It's going to be 3, 4, 5 months. Like, let's find out early, is it going to be a yes or no? Technical win, yeah. Product fit, get the numbers work out. Let's make this as quick as possible. Because when you get like 4 or 5 people involved on their side, the first person you talk to got to coordinate that on their side. They're like, oh man, I love the solution, but it's going to take forever, man, to go through my org. And it's like,
I got to show my boss. And, you know, you're lucky if your boss is the guy who signs the deal and says yes or no to it. Most of the time, it's not. Like, your boss either has another boss, or especially in business, you know, the person who actually is implementing and using the product, a lot of the times is not the person who signs off on the product. Yeah. And then a lot of the times that person who signs off on the product needs to have all of the players involved so he can understand the real needs, he or she or they can understand the real needs and what the real cost of it is and what the real value of it is. And then of course, what's that relationship gonna look like?
Yeah.
If I go open up another location, are you a guy that I'm gonna take with me?
Yeah.
To that location as well. If I don't like you, I'll just go to your. I don't care if the solution is a little bit worse. Yeah. I don't like you.
Yeah. Keep one. Yeah. And then when you get to the final meeting, make sure you know the personality of the person writing the check. Can they just know they got one pain problem? They want to hear about that one feature and hit a number. And then you're getting all excited because the guy nodding his head and you're looking at the clock like, oh, I got 15 more minutes. You know what? I'm going to tell that CFO about these other 5 features because they're so technically cool. He's like, whoa, dude, you won the deal. CFO's ready to sign. And you mentioned 4 other things. He's like, well, that's a lot of extra features. And you're looking at everybody around.
We're not going to use all that. That's the worst thing that you can do as a salesperson is start talking about stuff that comes with it that they're already going to be paying for that they're not going to use anyway.
Yeah.
Just let them have it. That's just free stuff that comes with it. And they don't need to even know about that until it's time to use it when they give you a call like, hey, what's this thing? But you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. Like you said, CFO's there. He's ready to sign the deal. You know, everybody's drinking whiskey. we're about to do the toast. And you're like, and it also does this and this. And then CFO's like, well, if I take all these things off, can I pay less?
Yes. Yes. There we go. You found it right there. This is why this number is so expensive. We don't need all this extra stuff.
I don't need all this.
Yeah, let's reevaluate this. Yeah.
Oh, no, Mr. CFO. All those things just come with the product, but I just need this.
Yes.
I don't think you're hearing me. All right, let's have another meeting.
Lost that deal.
We can roll back some of these features, and you can just give me the price of how much just this would cost. And that's not how your software is built.
Yeah.
Now you can't. You lose the deal because you can't offer them a solution that just does exactly what they need. Nobody's ever going to use all the features of the thing. That's why, like I said earlier in our conversation, I don't hit on the features. I'm having a conversation. I'm going to talk about a few things. I'm going to talk about how easy it is to use, how much time you're going to get back, how much productivity your team will gain from it, and how much money that you potentially can make from it. All the things that it actually does and how it actually works, my implementation team will talk about that when we sign the deal.
Yes. We'll get to that later. And then to make sure that the technical person on their side don't derail you, because maybe you didn't add the extra features, but maybe the engineer on their side next to the CFO said, yeah, and by the way, that integration, blah, 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 blah. And it tricks you into thinking, yeah, I'm going to impress this engineer. That's sometimes how you get off and then you lose the check writer. Like, uh-oh. No, but I want to make sure we stay focused here. But I'll send you something to email later for that to answer those questions. And here's the value prop. Blah, blah, blah. Let's go sign.
The best sales managers that I've had have done exactly that right there, William. They have done exactly that. That's a great question. I'll email after our demo, because the demo should be a great overview of what the product looks like, what the service looks like, how you would use it, who would use it, how you would get the reporting and the value of it. But those super technical questions, yeah, that they're good questions and they will be answered, but now's not the time. Right now we're going to talk about the value, because what my BDR has done has lessened the sales cycle, and they've gotten the engineer on it. They've gotten the guy on the team who is the floor manager who's going to be overseeing all the people who actually would be using the software. Then they got the finance guy or the CEO all on the same call to lessen the sales cycle. Yeah. Sales cycle's here when I only got the floor manager. Sales cycle here when I got the sales, the floor manager and the engineer. Sales cycle here when I got all of them on the same call.
Time to close.
So all I got to do is give you the new hotness. Yes. And I make sure that you understand the value you're getting out of this, how much time you're going to save, how much money you potentially make. And we'll show you how we as an organization will be there holding your hand the whole time, because we want to earn your business year over year. And we want your friends to come join the family, and we don't want to lose your business, so we're going to earn it every single month.
Dude, I'm loving it, man. I almost took my checkbook out, man. Like, shit, I'm going to go buy some of this. Can I get the core package, Keenan? Can you say I'm going to get a discount? If I sign this week, I get 10% off, right?
look, we have a good, better, best option. And that better, you know, in my opinion, it's better than the best. Because you can start right now. It's not 10% off. It's 10% extra. But trust me, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. We'll grow together. Let's just get started.
We'll grow together. But it's all a conversation. It's very similar to this. And I think that the BDR role really encompasses the whole, like, not just the life of the product and the feeling of the product, but the life cycle of the relationship. You know, when I first started this conversation with my BDR, who called me randomly, he'd been emailing me for 2 months, and he finally got a hold of me.
He was persistent.
He was persistent. He was nice. He asked me some good questions. He respected my time, and he made sure that the person who was demoing the product or the service knew who I was and what needs I had before we had the call. So when they came into the office, or they hopped on a Zoom call or something like that, before that, everybody was well acquainted, and we got right to business, and they answered all of my questions. And the questions that were really technical, they sent me a follow-up email with more people on their team.
Nice.
CC'd on there answering those questions, and like, this is how you do this very specific thing that nobody's ever going to do except you, you know, but we can do it.
I love it, man.
Yeah. That BDR role really sets the tone for how the company is going to approach the entire life cycle of the business with each other.
I love that, man.
Well, right now, man, I'm selling automotive software, and I've been officially at the company I worked for a year. But before that, like I said, I did a lot of consulting work with just business development in general for small businesses, and not just in the tech space, but in all kinds of industries. But out here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, there's a large, large emphasis on building new tech solutions. And like we say many of times in this conversation, there's no difference than going door to door and selling Cutco knives. The only thing is your product or solution is online. It's on a computer. It's on a phone. You know, it's glasses that have cameras in it and headphones. Yeah. They're headphones. It's a piece of hardware that has some kind of, it's a piece of hardware or software that is a product to make people's lives easier, save them more time, help them be productive, or make more money. That's all any of these products ever will be. We could talk about this kind of stuff forever, but I will say this. I think the biggest thing that we haven't covered is the type of person who could be in software sales as a entry-level BDR role, you know. And I didn't have to take a entry-level BDR role. I did it on purpose because I wanted to get out of the entrepreneur mindset of I got to find these different solutions and I got to be adaptable and changeable, which you do have to be as a BDR. But I really want to get into the, I have to be a better communicator mindset. Oh,
okay.
And in order to make money as a salesperson, as a BDR, SDR, whatever you want to call it, you have to be a better communicator at its core. And communication and as a BDR role is different than communication as a entrepreneur or a business owner or a consultant. A lot of that stuff is not just verbal. It's nonverbal. It's physical, you know, it's spiritual, it's mental. It's all, there's a lot of different ways you can communicate things. Whereas the BDR role, it's verbal communication. And then once you go up another level, it's physical, it's in person. And then when you add more tasks or more opportunities, you know, you got to learn how to write a better email. Got to learn how to shoot a better video. You got to learn how to communicate internally with people who are on your same wavelength, people who are direct managers or supervisors, indirect managers or supervisors. You have to learn how to communicate with people in different ways and be able to, what they like to call code switch, I like to call being a chameleon. Being a community and learning how to speak to people where they are, how they need to be spoken to persuade them to do a thing that helps both of you.
Oh,
if it doesn't help you, then I won't. I am doing you an injustice and myself an injustice if I try to get you to buy the thing that I have. If it doesn't help you, I want to, I wish we had a better word for it, but I want to disqualify you from the opportunity because it's not something that is actually going to help you. You either already do it well, or you're just not a great fit for the budget or something like that. And that's not to say that you're evil or wrong or any of the negative connotations we put it on, but it's just not a good fit right now. And that doesn't mean that's going to be forever. So I'm always going to be here when you're ready.
I love that, man. That's powerful. And a lot of people need to hear that.
I'll tell you that. The type of person that is not the, like, you don't need a master's degree in science, information technology, or you need to be the person who, like I just said, who just wants to communicate well. That's it.
I love it.
You don't need a degree. You don't need to be, you don't need a certificate. You just want to communicate well. and you enjoy that. And if you enjoy communication, you want to communicate well, you want to work in the industry, best way to get in, BDR.
I love it.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks for joining another episode of the Smart IT Podcast, where we explore what's next for IT and disrupt the status quo, simplify the complex, and reduce risk together. If you like what you hear, please like, subscribe, and leave your comments. And for more Smart IT wisdom, check out my website at williamreed.info.